dress them up in really cute things. It means that I also get to place a tax on their candy when they go to bed and eat to my heart's delight. And we were traveling on Friday night with our friends and all of their kids, and we were sharing back and forth a greatest hits of costumes past that we had. And I was recalling through my selective memory some of my favorite costumes that I've dressed up throughout time. There was this one. That was me before vampires and Twilight and all of that kind of stuff was cool in the first grade as a vampire. The next one is, that's Aaron and I as right and left earbuds for your iPod. We won the McMiniman's Halloween costume contest that year. And then here's us this year. Of course, going as the Frozen family, that's Princess Anna and Elsa, Kristoff the reindeer, or Kristoff, me, and Sven the reindeer, our family. We figure we better do this now because when they're teenagers, they're not going to want to do family dress up for Halloween. But I'll be honest with you, I have a selective memory when it comes to Halloween. I love getting all of the candy. I love going door to door. I love when you stumble upon that one house, and every neighborhood seems to have it, that is bent on trying to scare the dickens out of you. You know, this year it was some house that had strobe lights in their garage, and then this guy would appear, and I think I about peed in my pants when I saw him. True confessions. But I have selective memory because I always forget what November 1st feels like. When you wake up in the morning and you've eaten too much candy the night before, and your teeth kind of hurt or your mouth feels like it has some sores emerging. And maybe it's not you, but for me, I have no self-control when it comes to October 31st. You see, I see the milk duds, and I'm like, oh, I haven't had milk duds for a whole year. They're so good, and the Twix, and well, this is a strawberry Twizzler, so it's pretty much a fruit. I'm going to eat it, you know, and it's really bad for me because, you know, even things like Whoppers, which are basically like glorified chocolate chalk, they taste terrible. I forget that they taste terrible, and I eat them anyways. Oh, I am hopeless, but I have selective memory when it comes to Halloween. I love the 31st, but I forget year after year what November 1st feels like if I don't practice some good old-fashioned self-control. I have this tendency to remember things better than they were. That's what's happening for the people in our Exodus story this morning. They've crossed the River Jordan, have been led to freedom, and are on their way to the promised land. There were 10 plagues in Egypt, and now the folks are headed out of the way of Pharaoh and Pharaoh's system of domination and economic exploitation built on slavery, and into a new way, a way into a land of milk and honey and God's promise. But they're not there yet. Exodus 16. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." The people, en route to the promised land, are grumbling and complaining because they're hungry. And because of the trauma of all that they've experienced, they have selective memory about the past. Oh, well, at least in Egypt we had food to eat and our bellies were full. Wasn't it so good, those good old days in Egypt? You mean the good old days when you were a slave? You mean the good old days where it was only good for some at the top? I got my first lesson in the good old days when I was a sophomore in college, Southern California. And I remember our school, like many other universities around the country, had announced this homecoming theme. Now, homecoming in college is a great opportunity to raise money for the vision of your school. Some of you sit on alumni boards for your various colleges and universities. And they had announced this year's theme, the good old days. hearkening back to a time at the turn of the century when all was well and good, when the economy was booming, where we sat around and they even had this kind of picture to go along with it of like southern plantation life, a guy in a white suit, and I remember sitting around this table and the folks I was with, one was a Latino woman, one was an African American guy, and the other person was half black and half Creole. And he said, the good old days, huh? They were only good for some. Isn't that what's happening in our story today? In the way of Pharaoh, in the way of Egypt, they were only the good old days for some. If you found yourself at the top of the socioeconomic ladder. And yet here is Moses and Aaron leading folks out of slavery into a land of unknown. So easy to just remember that we have food. Even in the midst of hunger and fear, the good old days, our memory can be a little fuzzy. And that's the funny thing about memory, isn't it? In times of wilderness, we can hearken back as if things were better before. But it might not have been the whole picture. The way of Pharaoh was a 24/7 consumption, acquisition, and exploitation-based economy that was only good for the Egyptians at the top. It was not good for the Hebrew people whose backs the culture was built on. But it's hard for us, and it was hard for the Hebrew people, to begin traveling this way to the promised land and creating a new culture. A different way of being, because they knew the old one so well. And even if it wasn't fair, they at least knew their place in it. I think about how many times in our world today there's a dominant culture that maybe isn't so helpful or healthy for us. It's like me, all the consumption acquisition on October 31st, and maybe not feeling so good in the long run because of it. I saw it on Friday. I was reminded of dominant culture and the shaping of culture when I went to my daughter's preschool for their Halloween parade. It was the cutest thing ever. And they began to announce out all the kids who were sitting in a big circle. It was probably 30, 40 kids, something like that. And they'd announce costumes. They'd say, "Are there any Princess Elsas in the house?" And there were, no joke, 12 Princess Elsas, and my daughter was one of them, who came from the hit Disney movie Frozen. And they say, "Are there any Princess Annas?" The other character in there. And there was 8 Princess Annas. Is there other characters from other Disney movies? And then they did a whole Disney princess, and there was more kids. And then they said, "Are there any superheroes here?" Which Marvel superheroes are also owned by Disney, and they all came out. "Are there any Star Wars people?" And there was a Darth Vader and a Jedi that came out. Star Wars is now also owned by Disney. And I thought to myself, Disney owns my childhood. Now, you know, the point of the sermon isn't to hate on Disney, but is to recognize how powerful companies like Disney are in shaping our culture. To where 3/4 of this classroom, and I counted because I knew I was preaching on Sunday, were dressed up as characters owned by Disney, including my own family, including me. It's powerful to see when the wealthiest shape our culture. And it's not really a big deal. I mean, who cares? They're all cute. And really, at the end of the day, Disney's based on great storytelling. And these are all great stories to be told. And that's why people latch on to them. I mean, it's great until your daughter becomes a teenager and her waistline doesn't match up with the waistline portrayed by all of the Disney princesses. You see where maybe the dominant culture isn't so helpful. Or for me, raising 2 young independent daughters who so far I've been successful. wanting them not to have to wait for a prince to come and rescue them, but for them to find their God-given calling and vocation as a person and contributor to our world and society. You know, just when I think, oh, that dominant culture stuff doesn't matter, I came home, gosh, my daughter had just turned 3. And I think she's pretty smart, but I didn't realize how perceptive she was. My second daughter, who's 1 now, has these beautiful blue eyes. She takes after her dad. And my other daughter, Dylan, who's 4, was 3 at the time, has beautiful brown eyes. She takes after her mother. And everyone, when they see my beautiful baby Avery, they say, oh, what beautiful blue eyes you have. And so Aaron, my wife, says to me, hey, Ron, do you think Dylan, our oldest, is picking up on that whenever people say that to Avery? I'm like, oh gosh, I hope not. I hope she doesn't feel less beautiful because she has brown eyes. And Aaron and I have this conversation, and I turn to Dylan. I go, Dylan, you know you have the most beautiful eyes. And she sits up straight and she goes, no, Dad, I don't. I have brown eyes. Avery has beautiful eyes. And it's amazing how even at 3 years old, our notions of beauty and all of the things that inform our culture and make us who we are informed by a dominant set that shapes who we are. Our story isn't so different from leaving the systems of Egypt and stumbling into God's alternative way. And I'm not saying we should stop watching Disney movies or call for a boycott or any of that kind of stuff. I'm just saying we need to be aware of who's shaping the message of our society. Because I think when we're aware of it, we can more clearly understand our identity in Christ. And our identity as a congregation on 9th Street, across the street from Bend Senior High in Midtown Bend, Oregon. People set apart to be different than the dominant culture. Folks invited to participate in a different values system. So the people are on their way to the promised land, this land of reconciliation, this land where we have healthy ecosystems, a land of milk and honey, cows and bees, where there's enough grass for cows to graze on and milk to be produced. Enough flora and fauna in balance that the bees can graze and produce honey. What a beautiful image coming out of this time of famine, wilderness, and uncertainty. And the story picks up like this, after all of the grumbling. Then the Lord said to Moses, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you. Each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. And that way I will test them whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the 6th day when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days. There's some foreshadowing for us. And later, the evening quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather as much of it as each of you needs, an omer to a person according to the number of persons, all providing for those in their own tents." The Israelites did so, some gathering more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, those who gathered much had nothing left over, and those who gathered little had no shortage. They gathered as much as each of them needed. And Moses said to them, "Let no one leave any of it over until morning." But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it as much as they needed, but when the sun grew hot, it melted. Finally, on the 6th day they gathered twice as much food, 2 omers apiece. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil, and all that is left over put aside to be kept until morning. So they put it aside until morning, as Moses commanded them. And it did not become foul, and there were no worms in it. Moses said, "Eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none." God offers in this passage a story of a different way. A different economic system. One where some gather a lot and some gather a little, and yet all are fed and all, and there is no need. This is backwards from the way of Pharaoh. So what are the characteristics of this way of abundance? A few things to point out. Enough for all. And I picture on the way to the promised land, this is an intergenerational movement here happening. There are folks who are stronger than others. There are folks who are weaker than others. There are folks who are older, some who are younger. And yet they're all taking care of each other, giving to all who have need. We hear the characteristics of a way of abundance, no hoarding. Keep the mercy that you've been given moving. Because when we hoard, it grows rotten and stinks. Now, who can blame the Hebrew people? They knew the way of Pharaoh so well that, gosh, if there was food there, we better grab it and put it in every one of our pockets because we don't know when our next meal is. But God offers a different way. Trust in me. I will give you enough bread for the journey, enough sustenance to get through the wilderness and go into the promised land. It's a chance to reorient ourselves every single day. We have that opportunity today. Grace upon grace for all of us. Mercy upon mercy for all of us. A chance to recognize when we're falling into Pharaoh's system and reorient ourselves to the way of abundance. One of the most practical ways that we can do that in our world is on that seventh day. The commandment to keep the Sabbath. And my thinking has shifted on this over the years. It's not just about me and a day of rest. But as the great Hebrew scholar Walter Brueggemann says, Sabbath is a day of resistance. It's a day of saying we don't need to participate in the 24/7 consumption, acquisition, culture of Pharaoh. But to rest in the mercy and grace of God. The people, as they headed to the promised land, were given holidays and rituals to remember who they were as a people, blessed to be a blessing through the lineage of Abraham. Today we mark two of these holiday rituals. First, it's All Saints Sunday, a chance for us to remember those folks in our community, those folks in our lives, who are a part of the great cloud of witnesses and have passed from this life to more life. People who have made the journey to the promised land before us. And it's a chance for us to gather around the table and remember that final meal that Jesus had with his disciples on the night he was to be betrayed. But I think we miss the boat if we just take the piece of bread and take Jesus with us wherever we want to go. Rather, when we come to the table, surrounded by the great cloud of witnesses and those we remember, those who have gone before us, may our memory not be selective, but may we remember as the body of Christ that has come before and will come after us on the great journey to the promised land. That is a way of abundance for us to participate in. Amen.